Robbie Ray's about to get a noisy ovation from 15,000 here at Rogers Center.
Four straight games with double-digit strikeouts. The first time a pitcher has ever accomplished that in a regular season.
Sheepishly, he is met by Alek Manoah, who says, "Big fella, I know you didn't hit a home run. You've been so darn good, you got to put this jacket on."
Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Thursday, November 18th. Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producer this week is Andrew Norton. Ben, plenty to talk about when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays.
Robbie Ray is your 2021 AL Cy Young Award winner.
Robbie Ray is the American League Cy Young. Got MVP finalists coming up tonight here as we record this on Thursday. We don't know yet who's going to win the MVP. I have a suspicion on who it's going to be, but there are going to be two Blue Jays in the top three. But Ben, we have to start with the Jose Berríos extension that was signed and announced this week.
And now to be here today and extending Jose Berríos is a very big moment for this organization.
It is a $131 million extension, covers 7 years, Berríos' age 28 to 34 seasons. There is an opt-out after the fifth year, so that would be 2026 when he is entering his age 33 season, and there are escalators based off of stats towards those, you know, the end of that opt-out period, like the end of those first 5 years, which can raise the salaries in the sixth and seventh year of the deal to make this a $141 million deal. Who knows what's going to happen at that point? Who knows what world we're going to be living in? Let's live in the today and the now, Ben. Your initial reaction, your initial thoughts when you heard about this extension?
Well, to be honest, initially I was surprised that it would take place at this point in the offseason, because honestly, you look at when these deals tend to happen and it's usually February or March. So I was a little surprised, but then moving past that surprise, you just start breaking down the deal, what it means. Essentially $11 million for his final arb year. And then even though the payment schedule will be different than this, you're looking at 20 on average for each of the six free agent years. So that's a very reasonable deal for the Jays. I mean, $20 million per year is under what you would pay an ace pitcher. And Berríos has been more of a number two starting pitcher, but certainly very durable, certainly someone who has the potential as he enters his late 20s and early 30s to be more of an ace. So paying him $20 million for his prime seasons seems very reasonable. And then from his side too, like to get this kind of certainty, $131 million guaranteed, basically a five-year deal from his standpoint, a five-year deal with a two-year player option to play for a contender, to play with people he enjoys playing with in a city that he likes. It's a great deal for Jose Berríos as well. So to me, this is a real win-win for both Berríos and the Jays.
So a few things on that. Our colleague Shai Davidi obviously had the contract terms. So it's a $5 million signing bonus and $10 million salary for 2022. So $15 million up front, and then another $15 million salary in 23, $17 million in 24, $18 million in 25 and 26. And then that's when the opt-out is. And if Jose Berríos does not opt out, there are salaries of $24 million in each of 27 and 28. And that can actually become $29 million each of those 2 years based off of stats and escalators that would occur in 25 and 26. Right. So let's just get that out there. I agree with you. When this happened, I thought, this is not extension season. This is not when we see deals like this typically go down. You think about everything that a front office is dealing with right now, all of the, this is a very Ben Nicholson-Smith thing to say, but like all the balls they have in the air,
yeah,
thinking about free agency, thinking about options and qualifying offers and trades and 40-man roster decisions and the Rule 5 draft, and also trying to kind of squeeze a lot of that work into prior to December 1st, because there very well is likely to be a lockout.
Yep.
There's a lot going on. So you would think that you would deal with extensions during spring training after the off season when you just have less going on. But this was a bit of a unique situation with Jose Berríos in that Jose had a little bit of a soft deadline to get this thing done. He wanted it done prior to really beginning his off-season regimen, his off-season routine and his workouts. Like, he wanted this done and dusted and settled with. And the Blue Jays actually started talking to him about it in season. like right before the end of the season, Ross Atkins approached Jose Berríos and said, hey, would you be cool with me reaching out to your representation about this and me going to them about an extension? Jose Berríos at that point had had 2 months in Toronto. His wife had been up to the city. They'd been out to restaurants. They'd been, you know, walking around, seeing how diverse and welcoming it is. Jose Berríos had a good relationship with Pete Walker, support staff, performance staff, his teammates. Obviously, the sales job had been done to that point. He liked Toronto. So he said, yeah, sure, reach out to my people. So very early in the offseason, Jose Berríos in Puerto Rico with his representation discussing the possibility of an extension. And Jose, I think, communicated at that point, like, let's get this done now. Like, let's do this quickly. If it's going to happen, let's do it now. And, you know, something, an interesting thing about Jose Berríos is he's very involved in just, like, he made some comments in the media in Minnesota before he was traded about the value of getting a free agency and about going through the arbitration process and about everything that goes into it. He's been very involved in his arbitration negotiations on one-year deals with the Twins. Like, he has dove into the details of that stuff, and that was similar in this case. So I think the Blue Jays knew that. Obviously, Berríos' representation knew that. The Blue Jays came in with a very strong offer to begin with. You'll read a lot more of these details in Shai Davidi's TikTok on the whole deal that will be coming out at sportsnet.ca certainly by the time this podcast comes out. I think the Blue Jays came in very strong, and that really just got that inertia and that momentum going earlier. So I think those are some of the reasons why this deal happened at a little bit of a strange time for a deal to happen.
Yeah, it's a strong offer for sure. $131 million. I mean, we're talking substantial. And then as you mentioned there with the structure, it's interesting. To me, the number that stands out most in that entire structure is $15 million, the number they're paying him in 2023. And 2023 for the Jays is a pretty key year in the sense that that is the final year of the contracts for Hyunjin Ryu, Randall Grichuk, Teoscar Hernandez, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. So that's a year where, you know, it's not like the entire team is about to hit free agency, but a decent chunk of the team will turn over in 2 years' time. And so by structuring it for $15 million in 2023, it kind of lessens the load for that year. And it allows the Blue Jays to do some more things because, let's face it, I mean, as much as this deal is great and it seems like a win-win, they still have so much work to do. This addresses none of their off-season work that they have to do. I mean, in a sense, it does because, you know, it is a nice long-term building block, but it addresses none of the short-term needs that they have to address.
And there's always two perspectives to look at an extension from, and that is from the team perspective and from the player perspective. And I think you would agree with me here that from the team perspective, this is a massive win. Jose Berríos is a young, durable frontline starter. He is, by all accounts, a strong clubhouse presence, a leader, a dogged worker. He's someone who I know takes his routines very seriously, nails his rehab, his nutrition. He talks about the importance of sleep. I remember when he was traded to the Blue Jays at the deadline, he was going to make a start very shortly after he was traded. We were kind of talking to him about what's on his mind. He was thinking, you know, I haven't been sleeping that well. How is this going to affect me on the mound? Like, this is somebody who is very serious about everything that goes into being a frontline starter, being a durable starter. You look at him not missing a start for four seasons. That doesn't happen by accident.
Yep.
The innings totals that he's put up, you don't roll out of bed and do that. There is a ton of work that goes into being that durable and being able to take the mound as consistently as he has. So to get somebody who is all of those things on, as you kind of alluded to, what is essentially a six-year free agent deal at a $20 million AAV.
Yeah.
Holy crap. The Blue Jays could not get this piece of paper in front of Jose Berríos' pen soon enough. Because you think about it, the risk for the Blue Jays is that Jose Berríos suffers a major injury in 2022 or is suddenly far less effective in 2022. That risk is severely mitigated by how dependable Berríos has been, how good he's been, how durable that he has been. But that's really the only risk, because beyond that, if the Blue Jays didn't extend him and Berríos was good in 22 and healthy in 22, they would have been looking at signing him long-term in free agency beyond that anyway. So like, if he gets hurt or if he declines significantly in 24, you were already going to be paying him a ton of money anyway. So realistically, in my opinion, the risk for the team is really contained to 2022, and the rest is just the cost of doing business.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there, because, you know, this is a pitcher that you want to keep long term, especially if he had gotten to free agency after a good season. They would have been looking to re-sign him without a doubt,
right?
Especially when you see how they're operating now in free agency and clearly operating like a big market team, as they should. I guess I see this as a win for the Jays. I see this as a good deal for the Jays. I don't see this as like necessarily like a huge coup. I think that, you know, if they sign Vlad for $131 million over 7 years, that's like a home run. You know, that's like the kind of deal that you're like winning executive of the year over. Whoa. You know, I think for Berríos, like, it's fair, right? It's fair. He's got an opt-out in there. Honestly, I see it as like a fair deal for Berríos. I think it's a phenomenal deal because he gets $131 million. But I think it's a win-win.
Look, $131 million, nothing to shake a stick at.
Nope.
It's more money than I'm ever going to have in my life. Jose Berríos is descendants are going to be very well off,
yeah,
because of this deal. He has set himself and his family up for life because of how well he throws a little rock across a plate. Hallelujah. Good for him. That's terrific. I still don't love it for Jose Berríos.
Interesting.
And for all the same reasons that I love it for the Blue Jays.
Huh.
Durable, young, effective frontline starter. Good guy in the room, you know, nails his routine, like everything that I just said. Like, this is exactly the kind of guy who could have done very, very well in free agency. And he was only a year away. And who could be better positioned to bet on themselves than a guy who hasn't missed a start in 4 years, who has been healthy throughout, who has been effective. And yes, he is switching divisions to the American League East. He is not going to be, you know, chewing up some of those, you know, soft AL Central foes anymore. But I think there is every reason to believe that Jose Berríos is going to continue to be really good in 22 and really healthy. The risk for him would be like taking a comebacker, you know, or like, I don't know, stepping on a sprinkler and shredding an ACL or whatever. But who could have been better positioned to bet on themselves, pocket their $11 million in arbitration, go out, pour all of their energy into putting up the best possible season in 2022, and enter free agency the year following as a 28-year-old starting pitcher,
yep,
who has all of those characteristics and traits going for him that I said? That is a guy who the Yankees are going to be interested in. That's a guy who the Dodgers are going to be interested in. The Angels, all the big spenders. I really think that in the world where he goes to free agency and tests the market, his bidding, it would have well surpassed what he ended up signing for.
You could imagine scenarios where he signs for 175 over 7 or 210 over 7. I mean, I can imagine that,
yeah,
for sure. I think the first time Greinke hit free agency, he signed a deal in that range. And, you know, Berríos in some ways is reminiscent in the sense that he's extremely athletic, a good fielding pitcher in the same way that Greinke is, without necessarily being, you know, that overpowering Cy Young every single year. So, you know, maybe the upside there for him was 210. I think at the same time, in the deal that he ended up signing, if everything goes well in the course of the next 5 years, he's still someone who can hit free agency after his age 32 season. And as we're seeing right now in free agency, you know, you look at Max Scherzer at age, what is he, 36 or something?
37, yeah.
Yeah, Verlander's 39. Like, these guys are in demand. So if you keep up this kind of level of production, there's a pathway for him to get two big paydays here.
And when you're getting $131 million, possibly $141, what's another 30 and 40,
right?
Like, I understand it. Like, you're going to pass up 131 for the hopes of 170. Like, when you're already like dealing with a number that big, I get it. But that's why the system kind of sucks, right? Because it puts players in those tough spots, and so seldom do they ever get to truly maximize their value. Like, Jose Berríos is not maximizing his value by signing this extension. I look at Patrick Corbin. 2019, he's going into his age 30 season. He signs for 6 years, $140 million with the Washington Nationals. To me, that is like, it might even be beneath the floor for Jose Berríos in free agency, assuming he's healthy in 22 and he pitches as well in 22 as he has in the four seasons prior. Because Patrick Corbin doesn't have the same track record, doesn't have the same durability, wasn't as projectable with the athleticism, like you said, and we've seen what's happened to Patrick Corbin since he signed that deal. So like, I look at that and I'm like, 140 over six is more than the 120 over six that essentially are the free agent buyout for Berríos.
Yeah.
And I think that's below what Berríos' floor could have been in free agency, considering how many teams would be bidding on this guy, because he's a bit of a unicorn on the open market. How often is there a 28-year-old guy who's this durable and this good and who checks as many boxes off the field and in your clubhouse as he does? How often is that guy available in free agency? So this is a credit to the Blue Jays, the job they did on selling him on the city, on the organization, on the future in Toronto, on wanting to be a Blue Jay, because Jose Berríos is foregoing a very rare opportunity by not just playing out his final year of arbitration and going into free agency. He's foregoing that by saying, I want to be a Toronto Blue Jay for at least the next 5 years, possibly seven.
Absolutely. He's, in a sense, he's converting some of that potential, some of that upside, into certainty, the certainty that he'll make $131 million and he'll do it in a place that he likes. So that's great for him. And it does kind of line up with something we talked about last week when I was noting that people were kind of coming to me and saying that the Blue Jays are an attractive destination. And then here's more proof, right? That Jose Berríos didn't have to sign this extension. Doesn't happen all the time that players want to do that. But in this case, with this group and with what he saw of Toronto and of the Blue Jays, he decided that he wants to be here. And that's a great sign for the Jays because they need pitching. And, you know, you look at their kind of long-term rotation now, you know, Ryu kind of took a step back this year to the point that you're not necessarily penciling him as that ace anymore. So to have Berríos and Manoah going forward, that's huge. Those two guys, I think, give the Jays a lot to build around.
Yeah, Ross Atkins said on the record today that the Blue Jays are being courted by free agents.
Yeah.
They aren't necessarily having to, whereas in years past, they're going out and recruiting. Now there are free agents coming to the Blue Jays and saying, hey, can we work something out? Hey, don't forget about my client. Hey, let's talk about how player X or player Y could fit into your bullpen or your rotation. Yeah, that's a difference, but that's you know, you come off a 91 win season and you have a core like the Blue Jays do, one that should be together for quite some time when you think about Springer locked up, Berríos locked up, obviously Vlad and Bo still, Bo hasn't hit arbitration yet. Vlad's taken his first turn through. You've got a real core here going forward. Two ancillary benefits to the Berríos signing that I want to mention to get your take on before we step away for a break.
Yeah.
Number one, like, Jose Berríos is exactly the kind of athlete that I think the Blue Jays front office wants to invest in.
Yeah.
And that is one who takes his work very seriously, who is a dedicated, quiet professional, who is selfless, who is open-minded, you know, all those things that I was mentioning earlier about his routines, about his nutrition, his sleep. Like, you want Jose Berríos walking around that new player development complex in Dunedin next spring for your minor league players to see.
Yeah.
You want him modeling for those guys because he's nailing all the stuff that the Blue Jays have been trying to teach their young players in the minors, all the things that they've been trying to develop from within. The second thing, you mentioned Alek Manoah. I think that Jose Berríos is a tremendous guy for Alek Manoah to learn from because they have very similar pitch profiles. They attack very similarly. They use similar weapons, very similar approaches for turning lineups over. We know Alek Manoah is really eager to learn. Like, we saw that this season. We saw the relationship he forged and the bond with Hyunjin Ryu. And I think that Jose Berríos can just add to that and be just another sort of model of professionalism and of what it takes to throw 32 starts a year. To have, like, one of the best young parts of your team right now, a guy who you are envisioning being a part of your rotation for many years to come, to have him working with a guy like Jose Berríos who is so similar to him, I think that's, there's really a cool intangible benefit there for the Blue Jays.
I think that makes sense. And, you know, in each veteran kind of brings something different, right? Like, with Springer, it might be a lot of energy. With Semien, he brought so much professionalism to the Blue Jays and the way he went about his preparation. With Ryu, like, I just get the sense that his mental approach is really strong and that he's someone who's able to stay really composed. But are you going to point to Ryu as the guy who you necessarily want everyone to copy that style, who doesn't throw bullpens, who kind of, you know, has his own approaches to things? Like,
yeah,
probably not, right? Like, he kind of does his own thing, which he's earned the right to do. But yeah, I think to your point there, Berríos is someone who can be a nice role model for the organization as they move forward. I got one more thought just on Berríos here.
Let's hear it.
Kind of as it connects to the shortstop market, oddly enough, because, you know, as we've been talking about, the Jays have a lot of needs. And the way I look at the big shortstops out there, including Semien, fully expect the Jays to be involved in that market. On that list, like among the big five, I kind of view Javi Baez probably as the lowest of the five, or him and Story would be the lowest of that group. But the Berríos connection to Javi Baez, I think, is worth noting here, in the sense that they have the same agent and they're actually brothers-in-law. So, you know, I don't think that necessarily tilts the balances in a huge way, but I think it's maybe a bit more likely that the Blue Jays maintain that connection with Javi Baez and maintain an open line of conversation, knowing that, like I said, same agency, same agent, and brothers-in-law. I mean, it's not, you know, there's something to that, I think.
Yeah, they might be sharing some eggnog over the holidays,
right?
Is kind of what you're saying. And look, Louis Rivera, Charlie Montoyo, two strong Puerto Rican presences, and, yep, and on the Blue Jays coaching staff as well, and obviously quite a Latin influence in that clubhouse as well, for whatever that's worth. But I think you're right that, like, having Jose Berríos signed now for at least 5, possibly 7 years, he becomes a selling point for you,
and
he becomes like a bit of a champion for your organization, where he can go out and actually talk to other free agents and guys that he has relationships with. If he was just maybe there for one more year, we'll see, through arbitration, it's a bit of a different thing. He can now be part of your recruiting push, right? Like, he can now, like, hey, you want to send him a plane ticket to fly out and talk to whoever and spend some time with whoever at whoever's gym? Like, you're already in on $131 million on this guy. What's a plane ticket? You know, like, what's getting him on FaceTime with somebody? Like, he can now, you can bring him into that process and he can be a part of it. I think that's meaningful when it comes to recruiting free agents.
And it means more if he's there for 7 years than if he's like, yeah, I don't know, I might be a free agent, it's, you know, in 12 months' time. You know, this has some clout to it. And same with Springer, right? Like, obviously, you know, Verlander ended up going to the Astros, so that one's over. But the thought was crossing my head, like, if they wanted to reach out, Springer would be a good guy to get on the phone with a Justin Verlander. And I don't know if that happened or not, but those are the kinds of things that you can do when you have a bit more clout, and it's not, you know, I don't know, Brandon Drury and you know, your Billy McKinney's, your Socrates Britos. Like, I don't think those guys are necessarily, like, phoning up the top free agents. Like, is Max Scherzer taking a call from, I don't know. Like, you know what I'm saying here.
I do. And it helps when it's a player who they're going to be sharing a clubhouse with as well. Like, any pitcher that the Blue Jays are talking to on the free agent market is going to be talking to Pete Walker, right? Like, any hitter is going to be talking to Guillermo Martinez. That matters. That helps. But I think it goes that much further when it's, like, actually, as Jose Berríos referred to it, my brothers, quote, like, not my teammates, my brothers, when it's actually somebody who he's going to be sharing a clubhouse with for 162 games. I think that just getting to know that individual is a pretty meaningful thing and a pretty powerful thing in free agency. So we'll see. Blue Jays haven't signed anyone yet, but we'll see if they do, and we'll talk about some of the guys who they might be looking at when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters, Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. So, Jose Berríos is signed. His money is on the books. The interesting thing about it is it really doesn't impact the 2022 club at all. Like, the salary doesn't really impact your, you know, what you were going to have to spend. And you were always going to have Jose Berríos on your club in 2022. It was just going to be on an arbitration salary or an extension salary. So the Blue Jays have the same amount of money to spend. They have the same needs on their roster. It's obviously a good thing to have Berríos locked up, but Ben, all the things that we said about what this team needs to be doing and what it will be looking to do over the next little while, they're all the same as the things we were saying before Berríos was signed.
Absolutely. I mean, this changes nothing about what they actually have to accomplish in the course of this winter, which, again, we still think it'll be a split winter, likely lockout on December 1st. They got a couple weeks here, and then on the back end, they'll have to finish what they haven't done. But all of that same checklist remains the same. Two starting pitchers, multiple relief pitchers, at least one infielder, round out the bench. You know, that's kind of the checklist as I see it. And you've got a lot of trade opportunities to discuss within that as well. But, you know, in the way that the Blue Jays seem to be prioritizing things, and we don't know the full extent of the calls they make, and of course, they're gathering information on many fronts. But it seems like the starting pitching market is a priority for them. And they seem to be very aggressive in that market with an offer out to Heaney, an offer out to Robbie Ray, although he will decline it, of course. Cy Young winner, by the way. Congrats to Robbie Ray on, you know, it's almost like we don't talk about it because we've assumed that he would win it. He did win it.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. Yeah. But
we'll get there.
Cy Young winner, Robbie Ray, qualifying offer. Offer out to Mats. Syndergaard, I heard that they made an offer that was very strong, like 20 million plus. That's sort of unconfirmed, but I'll phrase it this way. Mm-hmm. My belief is they made an offer to him that was substantial. And then Justin Verlander, they were tied to Justin Verlander. So all of that's super interesting. We can dive into that from a lot of angles, but you know, my main takeaway from that, Arden, is just this team is pretty aggressive when it comes to that starting pitching market.
Tied to Eduardo Rodriguez as well, who signed for 5 years and $77 million with the Tigers. By the way, like, great fit, I think, for Rodriguez. As I kind of looked more into that signing, man, the Tigers have done a really nice job of developing talent. And Eduardo Rodriguez has talent. Like, he has stuff. He just hasn't gotten the most out of it. So I think he was actually a really nice fit for them. Would have also been a nice fit for the Blue Jays and their performance staff around pitchers and, you know, like, look at Robbie Ray was able to do with that crew and Steven Matz and et cetera. But yeah, the Blue Jays involved on all these guys, and that market has been moving a little bit. And I guess it's a slight surprise because we all kind of expected that. We've all kind of gotten used to just everything in the offseason taking place a lot later. And we all looked at that December 1st date looming over all this and figured, yeah, teams will probably wait till there's some more CBA certainty before they go out and do anything. No, we've seen some movement. The interesting thing with the Syndergaard and Verlander bit is those are short-term, high-salary deals, right? Syndergaard, 1 year, 21 mil. Verlander, it's a year and there's a player option. I think it ultimately looks like a 2 year, $50 million sort of thing. But this is sort of big front loaded money now that preserves flexibility later. And when I think about it that way, I say, of course, the Blue Jays are in on those guys. Because you look at it, 2022, like we said, the Berríos extension does nothing for their payroll in 2022. They still have all the money they had to spend. It's beyond that that things start to get a little tricky, where Berríos starts getting a little bit more expensive. Obviously, Springer's still on the books. Ryu's still on the books in 23. Vlad's going to be getting more expensive. Bo's going to hit arbitration. Teoscar through arbitration is going to be getting more expensive. So that's where you don't have quite as much flexibility. So I think, yeah, of course the Blue Jays are in on these sort of shorter term front loaded money deals and didn't get to the finish line with either Syndergaard or Verlander. But then I kind of look around and I say, well, you know, who else could sort of fit that mold? Well, you mentioned the Max Scherzer. Maybe he fits that mold. Maybe a Clayton Kershaw, if he's not going back to the Dodgers, would fit that role. You mentioned Greinke. There's another guy who, you know, like Kershaw and Scherzer are kind of at the higher end. Greinke a bit of the lower end based on past performance. And Alex Wood, maybe you could throw in there as well. But I think that's a segment of the market I expect the Blue Jays to be active in if they're going to add pitching via free agency, because that would fit best for their payroll commitments going forward. And it would maximize flexibility for them. Otherwise, when it comes to adding pitching, I think the most likely route is via trade, just to try to get somebody that's controllable, still going through arbitration, who isn't going to be as much of a payroll hit in subsequent years.
That'd be nice. Yeah. And I think they probably have to do at least one of them in free agency. I think trade would be nice if they can do that. And I'm sure they're exploring both right now. But yeah, the free agent stuff is really interesting to me. You know, you look at how the market is moving, like you said, it is kind of moving pretty nicely, which is great for entertainment purposes. And then, you know, B, how the Blue Jays fit into it and just seeing that they do seem really motivated. You know, I think that for those top end guys, like, I guess Verlander wanted to go back to Houston, but what an interesting pitcher he would have been for someone like the Dodgers or the Blue Jays or the Yankees or, you know, the Red Sox, any of these teams that's trying to augment their chances, and he's gone. So now it's kind of Scherzer. I really wonder where Scherzer's market is going to go. And I think that for anyone assuming, and at times I've wondered this myself, but for anyone assuming that he would sign like a 2-year, $60 million deal, I think the market's going to be way beyond that. Like, I'm wondering, you know, is it a huge dollar deal over 3 years, like 115 over three, or could it be 130 over four? Like, I think that we might be looking at a massive, massive deal for Scherzer, because Verlander didn't pitch at all last year and he got 50 million and he deserves it. You know, I think Scherzer might end up getting like a huge deal.
Max Scherzer about to sign his second nine-figure contract.
Yeah, could be.
How many players sign two of those things, right? Like, Jose Berríos is in a rare club as being a starting pitcher who signed one nine-figure deal. Max Scherzer might be about to sign a second. So yeah, all right. So maybe I'll take Scherzer off my list. I don't know if that would work payroll-wise for the Blue Jays. You think it would?
I mean, he'd be... I don't know. I don't know if it would. Yeah. It would be a challenge, but I think he's such a good pitcher that they should be in on him.
Yeah.
Like, even if it is... I'm just throwing numbers out here, obviously. I hope that's clear to everyone listening. But even if it is like over $100 million, $110, $115 for 3 years, like, is that the worst thing? He's one of the best pitchers ever, and he's still in his prime. Like, there's a case to be made there.
I think you would want a situation where he's motivated to come to Toronto. He believes Toronto's going to win. He wants to be here. He loves the PDC and all those things. And then team and agent start getting creative for how Scherzer gets his money, but it preserves the Blue Jays' payroll flexibility, because we know they don't want to be in a position where they are bloated with like very big contracts that they can't maneuver out from, and their hands are tied and what they can do in future markets, because they want to be able to acquire at the trade deadline in 2022. I imagine they want to be active in free agency next winter as well. Like, they're going to keep trying to make this thing better and keep trying to build. So, you know, yeah, for sure. Like, I think ideal outcome, you're adding two starting pitchers. One of them is a free agent and one of them is a trade for a young controllable starter, because that would help you sort of replace some of the like efficiency payroll wise that you had from Robbie Ray only making $8 million.
Yeah.
And Steven Matz making whatever it was that he made. And, you know, Marcus Semien was making $18 million, right? Like, you got a lot of wins from those guys for not a ton of money. So if you can package some prospects and get a Sean Manaea, who is going to be like $10 million in arbitration, Luis Castillo is like 7.5. Frankie Montas and Tyler Mahle are both around the $5 million range in arbitration, maybe $6 million. Like, I think that would be a very ideal way for the Blue Jays to have a high upside pitcher. I think through trade kind of makes the most sense, but it's really going to depend on how trade negotiations play out and what's available to the Blue Jays on the free agent market. We don't have all those answers just yet.
Right. And I mean, even it depends on the kind of read they get from, let's say, Marcus Semien or from a Corey Seager. Seager, Semien, Scherzer, all Boris clients. We said it before, but it bears repeating. You know, so which ones of those guys on that list, like, which are most likely to want to come to Toronto? And how long does that take to unfold? I'm not saying go out there and get Scherzer at all costs. Like, it's nothing like that. But I just think he's a guy who's very clearly like a 5 or 6 war pitcher at this point in his career. Still, I know he faded toward the finish line this year, but he can be a force in a playoff series. So I just don't think you want to close off that conversation. And, you know, hearing that Verlander wanted to train with the Florida team, for a moment there, I started thinking, wow, like, could this actually happen with Toronto? And it's worth exploring. I think it's worth exploring with Scherzer, but we know the Blue Jays, they're not going to say, hey, we have to get this player at all costs. It's always going to be in the context of what else is out there.
Hey, if it gets late in the off season, another one of those like beauty 1 year, $18 million deals falls right into the lap for somebody like it did with Marcus Semien last year, sign the Blue Jays up.
Oh yeah.
They are ready to go for that, but that takes patience and that takes circumstances to break your way in a pretty substantial way. Like, think about the sliding doors of last offseason where the Blue Jays don't get DJ LeMahieu and end up with Marcus Semien. I mean, if the Blue Jays finish a deal with DJ LeMahieu, like, how different does this team look? How different does the payroll situation look going forward? It's substantial. So as we've said, in 2022, the Blue Jays have room to maneuver and room to take on salary. It's really 2023 where things start getting a little tight. If payroll is going to stay level, like, if it's going to move up to like the 170 range, you know, somewhere in there, okay, that gives you more flexibility. But if you're going to stay around 150, 160,
things are going to get a little tight in 23 when you think about now, you know, Berríos being at 15 million that year. Obviously, Springer's on the books, Ryu's still on the books there. Like, you're already looking at close to $80 million committed for that season. And that's not factoring in Teoscar Hernandez in his final year of ARB, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., another year more expensive through arbitration, and Bo Bichette hitting arbitration. So that's 2023 is really kind of an important sort of pivot point for this franchise payroll wise.
And you know, to bring it back to Berríos, the fact that they were willing to go ahead, not just willing, able to go ahead with this deal, in a sense answers some questions that I think a lot of people had about the Blue Jays and the ownership situation, payroll. And you're probably not making a $131 million commitment if there's, you know, tons of uncertainty, if they can't get answers.
Yeah.
So it is suggestive that things are moving. And you know, I think beyond that, the optics of it are pretty interesting, because you mentioned LeMahieu. We're talking a little bit about last offseason, some of the near misses that the Blue Jays had. And this offseason, they seem to have had some near misses, right? Where whether it's Syndergaard or Verlander, they had interest. Heaney, they had interest in these guys. It didn't happen. But to me, it seems, and this is always risky because we only see so much of the Blue Jays fan base, but it just seems to me that the response has been different. And it seems like I'm not seeing responses where it's like, oh, the Blue Jays are finishing second on everybody,
right?
You know, which by some measure you could say they are, but still there seems to be a lot of confidence in the direction that this team has. And confidence, I think, even in the front office, which is something that we would not have been saying 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast, buddy, on the way that public sentiment has shifted towards this front office. I think people just have seen it, right? Like they saw George Springer, you know, and they saw what became of Marcus Semien. They saw what became of Robbie Ray. I think the front office has just earned a bit more trust, which they should have had beforehand, but now they've, you know, really like proven it hand over fist. Like, trust us, we know what we're doing, we have a plan, we believe this is going to work in the end. Look, Blue Jays still need to be better next year, still need to put together a team that can go out and win over 91 games. It's going to take more than that to compete in this division. Rays ain't going away, Yankees ain't going away, Red Sox are still there. Like, it's tougher to compete in the American League East than it is in one of the two central divisions, that's for sure. So, you know, the Blue Jays are going to have to build a roster that projects for, you know, mid-90s wins if they're going to feel good going into the season as a contender. You know, anything else on the free agent market that you want to get to here?
The pitching part is really what's caught my attention as I've looked at the shortstops more. I mean, I think Seager and Correa are great. Obviously, I think Semien's great. I think Story and Baez are good, but not quite as good as the other three. And then, you know, beyond that, the market seems to be unfolding pretty slowly. I mean, I've had my opinion further reinforced every time I look at it, that the catching market's super weak.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Manny Pena got a 2-year deal, right, with Atlanta. So, I mean, that kind of reinforces. There's just a real shortage, so that should help the Jays in trade talks. But, you know, to me, mostly it's been the focus on pitching. And that's my perception of how things are going within the Jays front office.
Yeah, certainly no doubt about that. Hey, Ben, Robbie Ray won the Cy Young. We probably should have, like, led the podcast with it. It's kind of funny, right, that a Blue Jays pitcher wins the Cy Young. It's not the first thing that we're talking about, but there's just so many other things going on. And I guess it's not technically a Blue Jays pitcher anymore, but pretty meaningful to have a Blue Jay win the American League Cy Young, especially a guy who, coming into the season, tons of question marks, coming off of a really rough 2020. Like, what is this guy going to be? I don't know what the betting line would have been on for Robbie Ray as Cy Young in April of 2021.
Could you have found one? I'm not sure that he would have enlisted.
I think someone would have said, yeah, I'll take your money.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a remarkable story what Robbie Ray was able to accomplish this year. Full credit to him, full credit to the Blue Jays for identifying him as a guy who had this potential. I don't think the Blue Jays, when they signed him for a year, when $8 million, thought they were getting the Cy Young winner, but I think they thought they were getting a much better pitcher than we saw in 2020. And credit to, like, all the performance staff and Pete Walker and Matt Bushman and everybody who worked with Robbie Ray to make this possible, all the strength coaches and trainers and everybody who helped keep him on the mound grunting and max efforting and going through bullpens and getting pole to pole through a season where he led the American League in innings pitched. Just truly a remarkable season. And now he's got a nice shiny little trophy on his mantle to commemorate it.
Yeah, Cy Young Award. I mean, that's, yeah, it's as good as it gets for starting pitching, for pitching in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's incredible. A great achievement by Robbie Ray. We saw it firsthand. Well, we saw part of it firsthand. Some of it happened in Dunedin and Buffalo. But what we did see firsthand here in Toronto was super impressive. I mean, to join Pat Henken, Roger Clemens, Roy Halladay, only four Blue Jays pitchers ever in the 40 plus years of the history of this franchise have won the Cy Young. Like, it's an incredibly hard thing to do. There have been a lot of great pitchers that have pitched here for the Toronto Blue Jays. And we've talked about a lot of them on At the Letters over the years. But Robbie Ray is the one who comes away with the Cy Young Award and deserved it. I mean, you look at the American League, Gerrit Cole, Lance Lynn, those guys had good years. They had great years even. But Robbie Ray was better. I mean, what was the voting? It was pretty close to unanimous, wasn't it?
29 of 30.
Yeah.
Voted for Robbie Ray first overall.
Right.
Yeah.
So almost a unanimous Cy Young. Like, that's pretty remarkable.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah, for sure it surprised me. I would have thought it might be more like 20-8-2 or something.
Well, and because I thought about this quite a bit because I voted on American League Cy Young, and it was clear who the top two were, right? It was obviously Ray and Cole. And then there was a group of like eight dudes that you could have made a case for from 3 to 5 on your ballot.
Yep.
And I would not begrudge anybody who had any order of them 3 to 5 because you could have made a really good case for a lot of guys in the American League. But there was clearly a top two in Ray and Cole. And like, it's interesting. I voted on Cy Young a couple times and you can go deep down some real rabbit holes with trying to evaluate pitchers in a single season. Like, there's the obvious stuff, right? Innings pitched, ERA, strikeouts, walks, but then you can go down the expected stats rabbit hole, then you can start thinking about the defense behind the guy,
who they faced.
You can start thinking about the quality of competition.
Yeah.
Robbie Ray and Gerrit Cole pitching in the American League East is a lot different than Lance Lynn pitching in the AL Central. Not just quality of competition, but environment as well. You can get down into, you know, the fly balls a guy allowed and how many of them were outs on the warning track, where if that guy was pitching at Fenway, they're bombs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can get so deep into the quality of the stuff, how good, how effective were this guy's pitches. I mean, and for Gerrit Cole, like, the case for him was a lot of the expected statistics, right? And it was a lot of the, like, what should have happened. When it came down to it, for me, Robbie Ray led the American League in innings pitched, ERA, and strikeouts.
Yeah.
That's what actually happened.
Yeah.
Layering in the quality of competition and the ballparks he was pitching in, not just Rogers Center, minor league ballparks, Dunedin, Buffalo, considering all of that, like, to me, that, you know, Robbie Ray was the obvious case. But I also was like preparing myself to see a bunch of people choose Gerrit Cole and to see it the other way, and to think that, you know, Gerrit Cole's expected stats and some of his peripherals underlying numbers say that he maybe had a better season, just didn't see the results that he deserved to. I wonder how much of it was the recency bias of the way Gerrit Cole finished the season. Unfortunately, had that hamstring issue, kind of limped to the finish line, while Robbie Ray was pitching for the best team in baseball over the final month. I think recency bias probably played into it a little bit. But yeah, I was expecting there to be more Cole voters than there were.
Yeah, it's interesting. To me, these awards are about what actually happened. And if a guy, you know, let's say he gets a crazy BABIP and he hits 350 and he shouldn't have, and that impacts his WAR and it's totally unsustainable. Well, I mean, it still happened. He still got those hits. Yeah. So, you know, I that's the way I tend to look at it. But so you mentioned your top two. So was Ray one for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
I was not the lone person who did not vote for Robbie
that
Ray.
That would have been burying the lead there for sure. For sure. But just to verify, okay, so you had Ray 1, Cole 2, yes. And then who was your number 3?
I think I had Montas 3,
okay.
Berríos 4, and Eovaldi 5.
Oh, right, because it goes to 5 for Cy Young.
Yeah, it goes to
10
5.
10 for MVP, yeah. And 3 for manager.
I didn't have Lynn in my top 5 because the workload just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And you just don't know what would have happened over those 40 to 45 innings that he pitched less than,
you know, Ray, Berríos, Eovaldi, Montas, Cole, right? So for me, like Lancelin didn't even qualify for the ERA title, right? So he just wasn't there for me from a workload perspective. But like I said, I don't begrudge anybody who voted for him, or like there were a number of other, like you could have thrown Liam Hendricks in there and I would have been like, yeah, I can see that, right? Like there were, you know, I think a cluster of eight guys who made sense in 3 to 5. But I think the top two were rather obvious. For me, Ray as number one on my ballot was obvious, but I could have seen somebody voting for Cole.
Yeah, because I think on the other side of it, like, you know, there is a place for, you know, the projections and what it says about what's most likely to happen. And that's where, like, if you're looking at the projections, someone like Eduardo Rodríguez, who has an ERA close to 5, okay, he still gets paid huge dollars. But I wouldn't put Eduardo Rodríguez high on a Cy Young ballot because he allowed a bunch of runs, and the goal is to not allow runs. So I just wouldn't do it, even if I believe that going forward, he's a projected top five pitcher in the American League.
Yeah, I mean, you could have made a case for Rodon, right? Who was like dominant, but like, again,
so good.
Workload just wasn't quite there, wasn't able to take the mound. You could have made a case for McCullers. And like, I don't think Berríos had a terrible case for, you know, somewhere 3 to 5 on the ballot. He was there on mine, right? And Eovaldi, obviously. So you know, maybe Giolito deserved to do better. I don't know. Like, but yeah, I think if there was a situation where like Robbie Ray had been insanely lucky, right? You know, and had like some amazing defense played behind him, or played in this huge ballpark and had a bunch of fly balls that, you know, fell right at the wall or whatever, it'd be like, fine, okay, I see the case. But no, Robbie Ray's results were legit. Like they were earned, and the strikeouts are very real, and the stuff was exceptional. I mean, there's, you know, his results were not hollow at all. So it was a really easy vote for me.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it can be tough. I think that the one that I've never voted on that I think would be really hard would be manager. I've never had to vote for
Impossible.
That. And I just like, I mean, it would be so difficult. It would be almost as hard as voting for like bench coach of the year, like, or like assistant general GM. Manager. Yeah. It's like, okay, you're part of an organization. I see that your organization did well. I guess I'll give you a second place vote.
We don't see 80% of what a manager does. So how am I at all qualified to evaluate that, right? Like, what do we evaluate managers on? Their bullpen deployment, and then like how competent they sound explaining themselves after the game, right? Like, you know, how well they can argue their maneuvers in post-game, you know, quotes. It's like, oh, Tony La Russa didn't really explain himself very well there, did he? Like, we just don't see enough of what they do. So much of what they do is behind closed doors and is managing in a clubhouse and is dealing with personalities and getting the best possible performances out of individuals. I'm not in a position to evaluate that. I just don't have enough information. You know, it's kind of like with the Hall of Fame, like character clause. I don't have enough information. I don't know the guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's even for players who cycle through the Toronto market. Imagine like the guys who play their whole careers in Kansas City or in San Diego. Like, do I know Eric Cosmer's character? I have no idea. No clue. No. Which, you know, in some ways, like it makes MVP the easiest to vote for, because you're just voting on who had the best season, who added the most value. And, you know, I think we'll find out those results after we're recording this here on Thursday. So anyone listening will already know. Presumably it's Shohei Ohtani who wins. Vlad and Semien deserve it. Second and third finishers. I mean, incredible seasons for both of those guys, and deserve a mention as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. Chris Woodward might be a great manager. His team was lousy. But I don't know. He might have been a tremendous manager. Like, he just didn't have a good team. So, of course, he didn't win a bunch of games, because that's not the position his team was in.
Right. I mean, they finished 60-102. It's entirely possible that without Chris Woodward, they would have gone 55-107. Like, he might have made that much of a difference. We will never know.
No, we will never know. So, yeah, I don't think that we should vote on that. But that's a topic for another day. For now, Jose Berríos is a Blue Jay for quite a long time. And we imagine that there's going to be some more really significant Blue Jays news to come this winter, and we're really excited to be here to talk about it with all of you. We want to thank Andrew Norton for producing this week's episode. We want to thank Amal Delich for his help behind the scenes. As always, he's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Thank you for listening. This has been At the Letters.